Members, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Please silence all electronic devices. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Angolia.
Here.
Vice Chair Drake. Republican Committee Wilt McFarland is excused. Ranking Democratic Member Silvers.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby is excused. Clemens.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
DeSegley.
Here.
Fabricio. Geller.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Hague.
Here.
Latvala.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
McClure.
I'm here.
Nixon. Umphrey. Plakin.
Here.
Placencia. Rommel.
Here.
Schoaf.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Tomko. Wilhite.
Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Members, today we are going to hear five bills. Let's jump straight into it. First up, CS for House Bill 669 by Rep. Maggard regarding alarm systems. You are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair Angolia and the committee. I'm honored to present CSHB 669, an act relating to alarm systems. This bill will streamline continuing education for fire alarm system agents, clarifies Florida statute regarding CCTVs and inspection requirement for fire alarms projects, and simplify the permitting process for a limited number of fire alarm components. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions showing none? I see that you have two amendments.
Yes, sir.
You are recognized to explain Amendment 1, barcode 134-137.
All right, thank you. This amendment makes changes to include video cameras to the current language. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Having explained the amendment, members, any questions on the amendment? Showing no questions, is there any public testimony on the amendment?
Yes, sir.
None on the amendment. Members, we in debate on the amendment. Showing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Wave closed.
Having closed on the amendment and without any objections, we are going to show that amendment adopted. Show that amendment adopted. We are going to move on to Amendment 2, barcode 038781. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment makes changes to bring the language into conformity with the language of the Senate version. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Having explained the amendment, any questions on the amendment? Showing none, is there any public testimony on the amendment? Showing none, members, we in debate on the amendment. Showing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Wave closed, Chair.
Having closed on the amendment, members, and without objection, we're going to show that amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Any public testimony on the bill as amended? Phil Suderman, Americans for Prosperity. Waiving its support. Thank you, sir. David Shep, Florida Automatic Fire Alarm Association. He is waiving in support. Diana Ferguson, ADT. Waiving in support. Showing no other public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill before, showing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Wave closed, sir.
Having waived close, a question now occurs on CS for House Bill 669. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake.
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt McFarland is excused. Ranking Democratic Member Silvers.
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby is excused. Clemens.
Yes.
Daly.
Yes.
DeSegley.
Yes.
Fabricio. Geller.
Yes.
Grieco.
Yes.
Hague.
Yes.
Latvala.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
McClure.
Yes.
Nixon.
Yes.
Umphrey. Plakin. Placencia. Rommel.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Thompson. Tomko. Wilhite. Chair Angolia.
Yes.
The bill passes, sir.
Members, by your vote, show that the bill reported favorably with committee substitute. Good job, Rep. Members, we're going to move on to the next bill, House Bill 33 by Representative Posada Cabrera regarding electronic dissemination of commercial recordings and audiovisual works. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair. This bill updates the Florida True Origin of Digital Goods Act by updating the definition of electronic dissemination and including display and performance, which would require a person who owns or operates a streaming service dealing in commercial recordings and audiovisual works to post our identifying information on the website. That is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions? Showing none. Do we have any public testimony? Edgar Lavatro, Recording Industry Association of America, waiving in support. Edgar Castro, Recording Association Industry of America, waiving in support. Showing no other public testimony, members, we're in debate. In debate on the bill before, showing no debate, you're recognized to close.
Waive close.
Having waived close, the question now occurs on House Bill 33. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt McFarland is excused. Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby is excused. Clemens?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fabricio? Geller?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Onfroy? Placon? Placencia? Roma?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Thompson? Tomko?
Yes.
Will Height? Chair Angolia?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 33 reported favorably. Good job, Rep. Members, are going to move on to House Bill 145 by Rep. Hage, Recreational Off-Highway Vehicle Weight Limit. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The purpose of HB 145 is to facilitate the complete introduction of zero emissions, noise abating electric off-road vehicles to the Florida marketplace. To achieve that purpose, we need to revise the dry weight limit of these vehicles from 2,500 pounds to 3,500 pounds, and that is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions? Showing none, is there any public testimony? Adam Bassford, Associated Industries of Florida. Waiving in support, thank you. Ethan Merchant, Florida Attraction Association. Okay, gotcha. Showing no other public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill before, showing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Waive close.
Having waived close, the question now occurs on House Bill 145. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Whip McFarland is excused. Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby is excused. Clemens?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fabricio? Geller?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Onfroy? Placon?
Yes.
Placencia? Rommel?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Will Height? Chair Angolia?
Yes. Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 145 reported favorably. Good job, Rep. Members, we are going to move on to House Bill 489 by Rep. Cheney. Regarding tourism marketing. You're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for inviting me here to explain House Bill 489. This bill extends the sunset clause on Visit Florida from 2023 by 5 years to 2028. That is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions? The bill sponsor, Rep. DeSegli, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill forward. Can you explain to us on this committee kind of, you know, how the state deals with, you know, accountability? How do we justify the return on investment with the funds that are currently provided to Visit Florida?
Rep.
Thank you, Chair. Visit Florida was reviewed in 2021 by the Florida Office of Economics and Demographic Research, and they reported an ROI of 3-1. And Visit Florida is required to do quarterly reporting, and reports are available to the public, to the legislature at any time. The legislature also authorizes their budget on an annual basis. So at any point, if the legislature is unhappy with the results of these reports and their ROI, we could certainly defund them.
Follow-up?
I do have one more follow-up. And this might be just kind of a refresh my memory question, but was there a period of time in the last, say, five or so years where the funding of Visit Florida got to kind of a, you know, a level where that did have a negative impact on tourism coming to our state?
Response?
I'm not aware of that specific effect. I know that there were issues with Visit Florida years ago. Everybody refers to it as the pit bull incident. And since then, they've got new management. Dana Young, former representative senator, has really turned things around in Visit Florida and made the agency a lot more transparent. We have a Visit Florida rep here who may be able to respond more specifically to your question if you'd like, Chair.
When we get to that point, yes, we can call on. Any other questions? Members, any other questions? Okay, public testimony. Ethan Merchant, Florida Attractions Association, waiving in support. Thank you. Matthew Forrest, Destination Florida.
Waiving support.
Waiving support. Thank you. Robert Stewart, Central Florida Hotel and Lodging Association.
Waiving support.
Waiving in support. Thank you. Phil Suderman, Americans for Prosperity. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Philip Suderman. I am the Policy Director with Americans for Prosperity, Florida. First off, I'd like to extend my heartfelt gratitude to the representative. We have had time to talk about our feelings about this bill. For anybody who has paid attention to our stance over the years, it should not come as a surprise how we feel about this bill and that we are against it. But I do want to take the opportunity to, again, say thank you to the representative for hearing us out, for being gracious in her time, for letting us have and being able to have that kind of open and honest dialogue. I know why people support this bill. They think that it is an opportunity to advance the economic interests of Florida. However, our view on this is that while we are all in favor of supporting Floridians' economic growth and supporting the growth of the state, this is just an improper use of government funds. As discussed, HB 49 would eliminate the current sunset provisions of the Florida Tourism Industry Marketing Corporation, better known as Visit Florida, and instead move the deadline to 2028. Americans for Prosperity remains committed to standing up for taxpayers and against corporate welfare. As such, one of our priorities is eliminating what we and our activists view as improper government spending, whether that be through subsidies, tax credits, or regulatory favoritism towards an industry, or yes, even creating advertising campaigns. However well-intentioned some government assistance may be, the fact remains that the practice of states picking winners and losers benefits a favored few and leaves everyone else to pay the price. Too often, these winners are special interests who lobby for special favors, while those who bear the costs are everyday citizens and small businesses who are forced to pick up the tab. I know that we've heard in the past, and it's been brought up, that we are no longer giving out direct checks, that we are not, you know, directly giving out money. But even though that might be true, we're still indirectly subsidizing, through favoritism, different areas and different corporations. We are picking winners and losers just by the very nature of having this type of advertising program go forward. I know we've also heard about, again, the economic return that it's providing. However, that economic return that I keep hearing about is not evenly distributed. Again, it's going indirectly towards those areas where the program chooses to advertise and towards those corporations and businesses within there. Quite simply, if we are getting an economic return and it is going to the taxpayers, we have yet to see our check. The role of government should be to focus itself on the core functions that society needs to operate. Visit Florida is not one of those vital roles. The goal for government is even more important now as our nation and our state look to move forward from the economic effects of COVID-19. Florida is ready to move forward and create real opportunity. And prosperity comes when government gets out of the way and lets individuals of Florida create new and innovative products which make all of our lives better. Americans for Prosperity Florida and our activists believe strongly in fiscal responsibility when it comes to taxpayer dollars. And it is for this reason that I ask for your respectful opposition to this bill. Thank you very much, Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Katie Juckett, Visit Florida. And members, if you have any questions, I'm assuming this is the lady to ask the questions. You are recognized.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me the time to speak before you today, and thank you, Representative Cheney, for sponsoring the Visit Florida Reauthorization Bill. Dana Young sends her apologies that she's not here in person today, but she and Visit Florida are hosting over 600 attendees from over 24 countries in Tampa this week at our dual Visit Florida trade shows, Florida Huddle and Encounter, where travel, trips, and trade will be, business will be done right there. The most important thing you need to know today is that Visit Florida is making money for the taxpayers of Florida. The value that the state receives for their investment in Visit Florida is truly phenomenal and cannot be understated. EDR reported that our return on investment for Visit Florida is for every dollar we put in, we receive $3.27 back. That means that we are more than tripling the state's investment. As a public-private partnership, we are matching one-to-one the state's investment with a private investment. The support of the tourism industry for Visit Florida remains steadfast. We have a long list of tourism businesses who are writing us checks, not the other way around, for the opportunity to partner and participate in our marketing programs. When it comes to marketing Florida, we are supporting every county and every community in our state, large and small. Recent data shows that our marketing of rural communities and off-the-beaten-path experiences has been incredibly successful for our smaller and more rural counties. In fact, as a result of our marketing, hotel revenue in several of our small inland counties grew by nearly 24% last year. People who see our advertising have been shown to be twice as likely to visit Florida. Florida is leading every other state and many parts of the world in the recovery and rebound. We were able to build an incredible strategic advantage by being the only destination in the market for roughly 7 months. But this competitive strategic advantage that we've been enjoying will not last forever. We are already starting to see that other tourist organizations are aggressively marketing their destinations. Tourism is a hyper-competitive industry, and Visit Florida is committed to maximizing our market share both domestically and internationally. Since we re-entered the market, Florida has seen its visitation grow by leaps and bounds. We are thrilled to report that the overall visitation officially surpassed pre-pandemic levels in Q3 of last year, which marked the second consecutive quarter of growth in domestic visitation. Looking ahead, it's important that we do not take our foot off the gas and continue the momentum that we have going. Meaningful reauthorization of Visit Florida will ensure we can do just that. I thank you, Chair, for your time.
Members, any questions? Rep. Rommel, more questions.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your presentation. Pre-pandemic, what percentage of your budget was used to advertise in non-U.S. territories?
That's a great question. I do not have that number in front of me today, but I would be happy to get it for you.
And if you're getting that, if you could let us know that during the pandemic, did your budget to non-U.S. territories go up, go down, or stay the same?
For a response.
Thank you, Chair. Are you asking me what percentage of our budget we're spending on international marketing during the pandemic versus before the pandemic?
Correct.
Clarification. Yep.
Thank you. So what I can tell you off the cuff is that we have remained in those markets by doing creative events to keep ourselves top of mind, even though with their ability to travel here was not there because of the rules and regulations. But we know that our international visitors tend to come and stay here longer and spend twice as much as our domestic visitors. So it's a market that we wanted to make sure when the moment arises that they can come. And as they're trying to think of dreams of visiting here again in Florida and our warm weather, we want to make sure we're top of mind. So we've been steadfast in that effort.
Any further questions? Showing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Samantha Padgett, Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. You are recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Samantha Padgett. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations and General Counsel for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee this afternoon. And we're very pleased on behalf of the hotel and restaurant industries in the state of Florida to stand in support of this good bill. And we thank Representative Cheney for her sponsorship. We have always enjoyed a very strong relationship with our friends at Visit Florida, and our appreciation only deepened in the midst of the pandemic. Just as they have done after hurricanes and after the oil spill, Visit Florida reminded the world that we were open for business and ready to welcome them. This legislation will push back Visit Florida's sunset date to 2028. With that additional time, it can attract top industry talent to join its team and engage in more long-term marketing and strategy. This strengthens our hospitality industry and our overall economy in the state of Florida. We ask for your support for this good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Derek McGree. Derek McGee, Florida Chamber of Commerce. Wave and support. Adam Bassford, AIF.
Adam Stuntow, AIF. Wave and support.
Wave and support. Thank you. Robert McKee, Florida Association of Counties. Waving in support. Daphne Sandville, City of Fort Lauderdale. Waving in support. Matthew Forrest, Destinations Florida. Waving in support, thank you. Robert Shalley, Florida Retail Federation. Waving in support. Frank Stevens, Auto Club Group, AAA. Waving in support. Steve Dial, Polaris. Waving in support, thank you. Eric Prutzman, Alarm Association of Florida. Is that on this bill? 669, okay. There we go. Showing no other public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate, Gelisaurus in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak in support of this. This is a very important industry to my constituents, to both Dade and Broward County, and the degree to which we're a tourism-dependent economy is very significant. I know there have been some questions raised in the past about Visit Florida. I think that the reforms that were instituted were good, but they've been done. And coming out of this pandemic, as hopefully we are, it's very important that we support this industry. I think the best argument for doing this, for this extension, and I think the length is appropriate, the best argument is our competitors in other states and other places continue to advertise, and we cannot kind of, if you can call it that, unilaterally disarm. We need to keep our efforts going because our competition is not stopping. That's the basis of how free enterprise works. You want people to focus on you. You got to tell them what you've got to offer. So I think I speak not just for myself, but for a lot of people from the two counties I represent and a lot of people on my side of the aisle where we say, this is a good idea. It's a good program. We need to all stand up in support of this because we need the business. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further debate. Rep. Lisencia in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, I just have been in and out of the committee, but I wanted to make sure that I went on record to support this bill. I think it's a great move forward for our state, making sure that we have consistency, making sure that not just our urban areas are represented in marketing for our tourism that our great state provides, but also our rural areas that may not necessarily have the budgets that our large tourism centers have. I come from an area in Central Florida where we are the tourist capital of the world, and I know that that our marketing arms between Visit Orlando and some of the other adjacent counties are able to do much of the work on their own, but that's not what this bill is about. This bill is about the entire state of Florida, and what Visit Florida means to the entire state and the economy of the state. And I look forward to voting for this bill.
Rep. Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief, and thank you, Representative, for working on this issue and bringing this good bill forward. I'm proud to support it. I've supported it in the past. We'll continue to do so. If we're not doing it, we're not marketing Florida, then somebody else, everybody else is out there marketing their location, and folks are going there. And so I commend you and everybody behind it. Thank you.
Rep. Clements.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the time. I remember when I was at the University of Florida taking an economics class, and most of you remember the bar graphs at the various colleges or places that you learned from, and in there was guns and butter, and guns and butter, and you had the constant debate back and forth about where to fund. Do you fund? Do you not fund? And then usually there was some, I don't know, somewhere in the middle, there was not all or another. It shouldn't be all or nothing today. I think there may be some challenges with the way some of these tourism dollars have been spent in the past. I'm not for spending $1 million for a hip-hop artist or a country and western artist or any somebody that's reciting poetry. That may not be the best expenditure of our tax dollar. But I don't think we should zero it out because of those. I think we should redefine where those monies go and hold people accountable, just like we hold everybody else accountable. I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater today either. And those of you as old as I am, you know what that old adage was about. We need to take care of the baby. This industry is Florida's baby. Tourism is our baby. I'll stand up and say it. It's ours. It's our industry. It's a good industry when times are good. It's a good industry when there's not pandemic, when we are closing the doors to our visitors and the way to get here through airlines and boats, big boats, are shut down. No. So this shouldn't be like guns or butter. This is our baby. We shouldn't throw our baby out with the bathwater. Tourism is our industry, and there are a lot of other nice places to visit. I mean, you know, there's the television thing that's going on now that's filmed in South Carolina, and it's set in Florida. You know what? It looks just like Florida. It's got palm trees and sunshine. So if we don't put our best foot forward in a fiscally prudent way, we're losing. We're losing. We're going backwards on the world stage. Visitors to our state, and I'll close with this, Mr. Chairman, but visitors to our state are, in fact, paying the child support for our baby, the tourism industry. I'm going to vote for this today. I feel strongly about it, and I would urge my colleagues to vote in the affirmative. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, any further debate? Rep. Thompson in debate.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this very good bill. This weekend in the town of Eatonville, there's a major celebration of one of its residents, Zora Neale Hurston. And without Visit Florida, that particular activity would not get the visibility that it gets. And I am very much in favor of extending the repeal to 2028 because it's very difficult to plan and execute an effective marketing campaign if you don't know from year to year if you're going to function and what your budget is going to be. So I think this 5 years will give them more certainty and allow for greater planning. I am the founder of the Wells-Built Museum of African American History in the inner city in Orlando, in a historic building that was a hotel that provided lodging to African Americans during segregation when they could not stay other places. And because of the work of Visit Florida, people understand that this is where Thurgood Marshall stayed, Jackie Robinson, all kind of entertainers stayed at the Wells Built because there were no other options. And so when you talk about off the beaten path, the Eatonville activity, the Wells Built are off the beaten path. We certainly don't have a budget like our neighbor Walt Disney World. And so we depend on the work that Visit Florida does, and I am very much in favor of extending the deadline to give some certainty through 2028. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Humphrey.
Thank you so very much, Chair. Representative, thank you so very much for carrying this amazing legislation. Florida is one of the most competitive places in the entire world, and I like for us to continue to win, and that's the reason I'm supporting this bill today. I don't like us losing to anyone. I like us winning in every category that's good, so continue the good work and visit Florida. I look forward to you being extended to 2028. Thank you.
Members, any further debate? Showing none, Rep. Cheney, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, just some thoughts as you are deciding what your vote's going to be today. There's every indication, based on our past track record, that we are going to fund Visit Florida. So as long as that's not going to change, if we can extend their deadline, they can take advantages of economies of scale. They can get better contracts with their vendors, knowing that they've got at least 5 years that they're going to fund them. And Visit Florida is a mechanism that's in place to address whatever comes up for Florida. So whether it's a hurricane or a pandemic or communicating that the quality of our beaches are okay to visit, although one county may be experiencing a problem, other counties are not. And so Visit Florida is a mechanism that's in place that they can respond instantly because the media is in place, the infrastructure's in place, and they can message appropriately to keep us as a place to visit. And that's my bill. Thank you.
Having closed on the bill, the question now occurs on House Bill 489. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake.
Yes.
Republican Committee Whip McFarland is excused. Ranking Democratic Member Silvers.
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby is excused. Clemens.
Yes.
Daly.
Yes.
DeSegli.
Yes.
Fabricio.
No.
Geller.
Yes.
Grieco.
No.
Haig.
Yes.
Latvala.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
McClure. Nixon. Yes. Umphrey.
Yes.
Plakin.
Yes.
Placencia.
Yes.
Rommel.
No.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Thompson. Yes. Tomko.
Yes.
Will Height.
Yes.
Cherangolia.
No. By your vote, show that House Bill 489 reported favorably.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Members, we are going to move on to CS for House Bill 723 by Rep. Buchanan regarding medical treatment of animals. You are recognized to explain your bill.
As many of you know, Florida has led the way in regard to telemedicine, which has proven invaluable during the COVID-19 pandemic. To address the needs of veterinary services, the Governor DeSantis and the FDA expanded the use of telemedicine to the medical treatment of animals. This bill codifies the use of veterinary telemedicine in the state of Florida. More specifically, it authorizes Florida licensed veterinarians to use audiovisual technology to diagnose and treat new and existing patients. And it allows a veterinarian to indirectly supervise rabies vaccinations by government animal control authorities for pets in their care. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Gellosaurus, you are recognized.
Have you considered any kind of an amendment that would say that the telehealth services for pets is only available if they can adequately voice their complaints over the telehealth?
Thank you for that question, Representative Geller. That's something we could certainly talk about, but there may very well be an amendment brought forward here today, of which we'll also look forward to discussing.
Any further questions of the bill sponsor? Okay, showing none, I do see we have an amendment. Rep. Tomko, you're recognized to explain Amendment 1.
Thanks, Chair. And Rep. Geller, unfortunately, this doesn't help the talking of animals. As an animal owner, I wish we could hear them all talk. But this amendment clarifies language relating to prescribing of controlled substances by a veterinarian practicing telemedicine. It prohibits a veterinarian practicing telemedicine from prescribing Schedule II controlled substances. It provides an exception under certain circumstances for hospice care, and it clarifies grounds for disciplinary action against a veterinarian related to ordering, prescribing, or making available medicinal drugs or drugs as defined in Chapter 465 or controlled substances as defined in Chapter 893. And that is the amendment.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Gulsoris, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. If my pet...
Rep, if you can...
I'm asking a question.
Yeah, but speak into the microphone, so...
Sorry. If my pet is having surgery of some kind, why should the pet not be able to receive controlled substances that would help ameliorate the pain that the animal might be going through? Or if they're not having surgery, if it's just, again, focused on the telehealth, but they can't get the surgery for a couple of days, why should the animal have to suffer until such time as they can get live in front of someone? Why the blanket prohibition on being able to help ameliorate the animal's pain?
I'm going to recognize the bill sponsor to answer that. Members, that Rep. Tomko introduced that bill on behalf of Rep. Buchanan. So any questions regarding this amendment, please direct it to Rep. Buchanan. You are recognized for a response on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So there in the last committee stop, there was some conversation. I've had a number of conversations with different members. You know, this amendment more or less clarifies what we're looking to do as it relates to controlled substances. It brings in line policy as it relates to what we're discussing this session around HB 17. Basically, we don't want to create a potential loophole as it relates to controlled substances. So as it relates to controlled substances, it will require an in-person visitation. Now, there's obviously potentially not in the scenario you mentioned, but there are also guardrails around hospice care as well.
Follow up, are you good? Okay. Members, any questions, further questions on the amendment? Any further questions on the amendment? Showing none, do we have any public testimony on the amendment? Showing none, members in debate on the amendment. Gelsaurus in debate.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the effort to clean it up, and I support the underlying bill, certainly. I think it's very well needed. Candidly, I think the amendment goes too far. There ought to be some other provision. I understand we want guardrails. Maybe it could only be for a couple of days' worth of controlled substance to give somebody a chance to get in. But if my animal is suffering and in pain, and I can't get in front of a vet, maybe it's Friday night and I can't get an appointment to see my vet until Monday morning, I don't want my pet suffering all weekend. So I appreciate that we have a concern with controlled substances, and I would support an amendment to deal with that. But I think this amendment, in my opinion, goes too far. I'm gonna be down on the amendment. Let's find a way. We're trying to help these animals. Let's not make them suffer unnecessarily.
Any further debate on the amendment? Showing none. Rep. Tomko, do you want to close on the amendment or defer to Rep.?
I will waive close unless Representative Buchanan has more he'd like to say.
Mr. Chairman, if
sure.
I may.
You're recognized.
And I'd just like to respond to that. If your pet had undergone surgery, Representative Geller, they would have obviously had the opportunity to spend time with your veterinarian, who would then have the opportunity to make that prescription. So I appreciate your point, but I think in most circumstances, that patient would have had the opportunity to see their veterinarian.
Having closed on the amendment, members, all in favor of adoption of the amendment, signify by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed, no. Show the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Public testimony on the bill as amended. Diana Ferguson, Florida Animal Control Association, waiving in support. Corrine Mixon, ASPCA. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for allowing me to speak today on behalf of the ASPCA. Corrine Mixon, we do support the content of this bill in every way. We like the idea of extending veterinary telehealth in state of Florida for a number of reasons, one of which the ASPCA cares about animal welfare. And I think we know that when animals have better access to care, we see fewer animals surrendered, and we see few cases of animal abuse for people that cannot get to that care. Now, you may hear at some point that there's not an access issue within the veterinary world. We certainly disagree with that. The USDA very recently said that there's a critical access shortage for our large animals, and so we know that exists. We also know that in certain areas of the state, we certainly see shortages all over the state, especially during the pandemic, but pre-pandemic. But in certain areas of the state, we have bigger problems. So South Florida, we have a number of regions in South Florida where there are access issues so recently and so big are those issues that in 2019, the ASPCA opened a veterinary clinic in Liberty City to go ahead and try to take care of that. So we can demonstrate that there is a shortage issue, much like we demonstrated in human healthcare when we went ahead and passed telemedicine bills relating to human health. We also know that these shortages exist larger in South Florida because of transportation issues. Certainly, we don't want that to hold back Floridians from having their pets, maybe language barriers, maybe temporary financial issues, so on and so forth. And so that's why we're seeing the shortages more commonly in those regions. We also know that animals often are happier attending maybe remote care. Now, don't get me wrong, in so many circumstances, a visit where palpation can occur is extremely important. And we knew this going into the human telehealth conversation as well. We know that with infants, if the parent or the patient presenter, in this case with the animal, cannot adequately sort of explain what the animal's been going through, the behavior, so on and so forth, then certainly the clinician, the veterinarian in this case, on the other end of the line, will find it necessary for that animal to come in for the visit. And so when that is not the case, however, when your cat Fluffy has, you know, maybe a slight skin condition or is maybe behaving a little strangely, maybe lethargic, your first step could possibly be to do this telemedicine visit with Fluffy. And imagine how much easier that might be and how much more comforting that might be for the animal than trying to get Fluffy into the box with the holes in it and into the car carrier and taking Fluffy into the car and into the veterinary. I don't think anybody's cat likes that. If they do, then you have a great cat. Congratulations. But I think that it's important for that reason. If we can make animals more comfortable, if we can make access better, then we're doing the right thing. The other reason is telehealth works. We've seen telehealth expand in the state of Florida tremendously. So many of you have had the pleasure of being a part of those changes over the last few years. And as we've seen those changes, we haven't seen any sort of increase in discipline cases relating to that care. People are acting within the confines of their licenses in human telehealth, and they will, we believe, in veterinary telehealth. So for all of those reasons, we encourage you to really look at this issue, help us improve access, help us lower the cost of veterinary care, which keeps more pets in the home, which helps us reduce neglect and lack of care for so many animals in the state. We ask very much for your vote today on this important bill, and thank you to the sponsor for sponsoring it.
Just a dumb question. Do you really have a cat named Fluffy, or are you just running out there?
No, my cat's name is not Fluffy, okay. But it doesn't even want to talk about this, so I'm not going to bring it up.
Got it. Thank you. Dr. Scott Richardson, FVMA. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Scott Richardson. I'm a practicing veterinarian here in Leon County. I am the past president of the Big Bend Veterinary Medical Association, current district representative for the FVMA, a Florida Association Equine Practitioner member, American Association of Equine Practitioner member, a former member of the American Bovine Practitioner Association, Society for Theragenology, the Kentucky, Tennessee, and Georgia VMA. I'm one of two remaining mixed animal practitioners in Leon County. I'm here to represent not only the hundreds of veterinarians in the BVMA, but the thousands of veterinarians in the state of Florida, the VMA, our clients, our patients, who are opposed to HB 723. We refer to this as the puppy pill mill bill. This bill was written, as written, will affect thousands of veterinarians in the state of Florida. Yet veterinarians have not been meaningfully included in the drafting of this bill. To me, this bill appears to be written with no concern for the actual practicing veterinarian, their clients, or their patients. Veterinarians are not opposed to telemedicine. It is, in fact, a potentially useful tool, a tool that I have used for almost a decade, but it has its limitations, most notably in the behavioral medicine and dermatology. These need in-person examinations. There is an impression amongst the supporters of this bill that I can see a picture, wave a magic wand, and diagnose and correctly treat the pet. This is simply not true. Veterinary medicine is much more complicated. Skin and ears need an initial in-person examination, and that's not optional. I cannot diagnose your pet's skin condition with a video or a picture. Does your pet have a zoonotic disease, like scabies or some types of ringworm? Does your pet have a fungal infection, bacterial, or ectoparasite, like fleas or demodicosis? All need skin scrapings and cytology, which is the microscopic study of cells, to determine the proper treatment. Same with ears. I cannot tell visually if your pet has a bacterial infection, a yeast infection, or if your pet has Pseudomonas, an infection that there is no FDA-approved commercial preparation for treatment. What if your pet is seen on via telehealth for an ear infection and your pet has a ruptured eardrum? Because an otoscope wasn't used in this exam, many, if not all, most common ear medications that would be prescribed, if used with a ruptured eardrum, will lead to ototoxicity, resulting in possible permanent deafness, head tilt, loss of balance, and or nystagmus. Same with behavioral disorders. These generally require lengthy home visits, questionnaires, and many FDA-approved human medications. The actual physical examination of a patient is the most important tool we veterinarians possess. We use our eyes, ears, hands, and even our nose in examining a pet. We use stethoscopes to listen to abnormalities in the heart and lungs. We use otoscopes to examine the ears for disease. We use ophthalmoscopes to look in the eyes. We use microscopes to examine blood smears, skin scrapings, and the examinations of cells from lumps and bumps to ears and skin. These are all needed in the proper development of a working differential diagnosis for our patients. This bill aims to take all of those away. You have been told it will decrease cost. This is not true. According to the Journal of Medical Internet Research in a study published in October of 2020, current evidence suggests that telemedicine does not routinely reduce cost. Indeed, there are over 5 out-of-state companies practicing teletriage in Florida already. They charge between $20 and $75 for a consult just to tell the owner if they need to take that pet to a veterinarian. That is after they run your credit card. Most practicing veterinarians, including myself and our 2 local 24-hour emergency clinics, do this for free. The same companies are just waiting to sign up clients to sell prescription drugs, including narcotics, without actually examining your pet. You have been told that this bill will increase food animal veterinarians in areas the USDA says it's underserved. How so? There are no provisions in this bill that address that. To practice food animal medicine, a veterinarian must possess a USDA Type 2 accreditation. Most veterinarians only possess a Type 1 accreditation. There are plenty of veterinarians who love food animal medicine, but due to lack of compensation and lack of safe working environments have led them to leave that side of the profession. We just heard about Liberty City in 2019. What you weren't told is that clinic is 3 miles radius of 6 other clinics. It wasn't needed. You have been told that this bill aligns with human telehealth. This is not a fair comparison, as my patients cannot talk and their owners are not trained to know the signs and symptoms of disease. You have heard that pediatricians use it. To an extent, this is correct. However, my daughter's own pediatrician will not use it till her patients are talking and understanding, as parents aren't trained into what they are looking at either. Even then, telehealth so often fails. My brother-in-law, back in 2019, had a swollen lymph node. His primary was only doing telehealth visits due to COVID. He was repeatedly misdiagnosed by him and thankfully did not give up. When he finally got to see an in-person visit with a different doctor, he was immediately sent to an oncologist. John was diagnosed at this point with advanced cancer, a cancer his oncologist said would have been easily diagnosed by his primary several months early if only his primary had seen him in person. and he could have been treated with a simple tonsillectomy and chemo. Instead, because he was misdiagnosed so many times and for so long, he would have to undergo several radical surgeries, radiation therapy, and chemo. Thankfully, he is alive to tell me this. What this bill does as written, What this bill will do is create conflict with several federal laws, regulations every licensed veterinarian is required to follow, leading them to potential legal jeopardy, potential loss of their license, and most assuredly, the DEA license and their USDA accreditation. FDA-approved human medications require a veterinarian to have an in-person VCPR before prescribing. That's about half of my in-clinic pharmacy and two-thirds of my equine pharmacy. Food animal veterinarians to write a veterinary feed directive. The USDA requires an in-person herd exam and VCPR. For a veterinarian to treat your pet with a compounded pharmaceutical for, say, Pseudomonas in the ear or hypothyroid disease in cats, an in-person VCPR is required. Narcotics. The Ryan Haidt Act of 2008 is still the federal law overseeing the prescribing of narcotics via the internet. This law requires an in-person VCPR to be established and will take an act of Congress to change it. This bill, as written, will lead to the needless misdiagnosis, pain, and suffering of veterinary patients. How many patients will be too far gone before they seek proper veterinary care because the telehealth veterinarian didn't do a proper physical examination because it's impossible? As an example, the constipated cat. Many owners see their cat go in and out of the litter box. There is no feces, so Fluffy must be constipated, when in reality, Fluffy has a urinary blockage. This is something I can diagnose and every other veterinarian can diagnose in seconds by palpating the abdomen. This is also life-threatening. If left to telehealth and they fail to advise the veterinarian, fail to advise the client to bring that cat to a veterinarian, it is most likely going to die. Veterinarians are responsible for the judicious use of antibiotics. This bill, by its very nature, ignores that. As I've said, dermatology cannot be properly done via telehealth. This bill states that those practicing telehealth will conform to the standards of veterinary medicine already established. How is this possible? Per the Florida Board of Veterinary Medicine, examination requires a minimum of four things: a weight, a temperature, a pulse, and respiration. How can these be accomplished via telemedicine? They simply cannot. The other day in the initial hearing of this bill, the bill sponsor noted that you had a 106-pound Doberman that gets anxious. Noting that it would be nice if he had to take his dog to someplace new to call a telehealth veterinarian and receives anxiety medications prior to. Yes, this would be nice. However, this request itself is illegal under federal law, as those very medications are FDA human approved, not animal approved. Also, having a Doberman, a yearly examination is essential to check for dilated cardiomyopathy and a large heart. This cannot be diagnosed via telehealth. It, however, can be detected with a stethoscope and other diagnostic procedures we can do commonly in-house. In closing, I urge you not to support this bill in its current form. This bill does not conform to federal regulations that all veterinarians are legally required to follow. This bill in its current form does nothing to increase access. This bill does nothing to ease pain and suffering, and is backed by corporate interests who do not care about Fluffy, but only selling pills, be it narcotics or the indiscriminate sale of antibiotics. Both the FVMA and the AVMA have offered compromise language that corrects the deficiencies in this bill and in Senate Bill 448. Again, I thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I will be happy to try to answer them.
Do you have a cat named Fluffy, too, or are you just throwing out there?
No, it's just a common term, sir.
All right, just checking. Rep. Clemens, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Doctor, for that compelling testimony. I think that you said a lot of facts that maybe some of my colleagues were not aware of and maybe thought that that may be the case, and you brought this to bear. Which small animal, large animal, I don't have any history or of chemistry or veterinary medicine, which side of the house in the veterinary school would benefit the most from telehealth? Would it be small animal or large animal?
For a response.
I'm sorry?
For a response. You're recognized for answer.
I'm sorry. I understand now. It would be hard to say. Certainly, rechecks would be an excellent tool for telehealth. That's where I employ it the most, both in my large animal patients and my small animal patients. It does avoid them to bring the animal in on certain things. Am I watching that horse do a lameness through a video? Has he improved? or can the owner show me areas that we were concerned of earlier after we diagnosed it properly, how they advanced?
One follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
You mentioned that some parts of this bill are not bad. What could you and the association add to this bill that would make it acceptable to the association?
You're recognized.
I do not have that language in front of me today. I apologize. I had it printed and left it at my office. But we have provided language that would make this bill acceptable both under the federal level and the state level.
Any further questions? Showing none. Thank you. Philip Suderman, Americans for Prosperity. Waving in support. Thank you. Brian Degangi? How do you pronounce it, sir? Degangi? ASPCA, you are recognized. Speak up. Move closer to the microphone and make sure it's on, please.
My name is Brian Degangi. I'm a Florida licensed veterinarian and I reside in Gainesville, where I serve as Senior Director of Shelter Medicine for the ASPCA. Prior to this role, I spent nearly 7 years as a faculty member of the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine, training hundreds of Florida's veterinarians. I have a master's in veterinary medical sciences from the University of Florida and am board certified in both canine and feline practice, as well as shelter medicine practice. As a veterinarian, I strongly support the PETS Act, since this bill will increase access to veterinary telemedicine technology for Florida pet owners and remove unnecessary professional regulations for Florida licensed veterinarians. Current Florida regulation forbids veterinarians from using telemedicine unless they first conduct a physical examination, regardless of the ailment or situation. Under these rules, Florida licensed veterinarians cannot legally diagnose and treat anything, even fleas, without first performing a physical examination. As in human medicine, a physical exam may be ideal, but simply is not necessary in all situations, like the common cold or minor dermatological conditions. For pets, an in-person physical examination may not be necessary in many common situations, including initial diagnosis and treatment of fleas, ticks, skin or ear mites, or certain gastrointestinal and skin issues, behavioral, nutritional, hospice care consultations, and anxiety, a condition which transport to a veterinary hospital and a physical examination may actually exacerbate. As you'll see in the bill draft, HB 723 does not change the state statute's definition of veterinarian-client-patient relationship. This legislation does not conflict with federal law, and seven other states already allow veterinarians to begin treating pets using telemedicine. Under this legislation, veterinarians would have the option to use telemedicine to provide care to new patients across the geographic and economic spectrum within a standard of care and under board oversight. Becoming a veterinarian requires at least 8 years of advanced education. Veterinarians take their profession and their licenses seriously. We can be trusted to provide care both in the clinic and using telemedicine. This legislation is particularly essential now because of an ongoing industry-wide critical shortage of veterinarians. A September 2020 study found that 75 million pets in the U.S. could be without veterinary care by 2030 if we do not update our approach to providing these services. As we have seen in human medicine, telemedicine technology can help bridge gaps in care created by the shortage of veterinary professionals in the workforce and can help people in remote or underserved areas access care. Access is not just about proximity. Increasing access to veterinary telemedicine will help many Florida families who otherwise could not access vital veterinary care for their pets and would elevate the veterinary profession. I urge you to vote yes on this important bill today. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Danny McVetti. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Danny McVetti. I'm a Florida licensed veterinarian, native Floridian, and business owner. I live in Hillsborough County, Florida, and I have traveled to Tallahassee today to speak in strong support of House Bill 723, the PETS Act. I'm grateful to Representative Buchanan for introducing this important legislation that will help alleviate the ongoing workforce shortage in veterinary medicine, reduce unnecessary professional overregulation, and help more Florida pet owners access the veterinary healthcare system. I also wish to thank Chair Ingoglia for considering this bill in committee today. I have been a Florida Veterinary Medical Association member since veterinary school, in addition to serving as the FEMA student representative during my years at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. We even donated to the FEMA's Political Action Committee and received the FEMA's President's Award in 2014. However, on this legislation, I very respectfully disagree with the FEMA's opposition of the bill. I have personally participated in efforts to negotiate a good faith compromise on this legislation, and I do remain hopeful that the FEMA will move forward, enabling veterinarians and pet owners to better access the many, many benefits of telemedicine, a movement that is supported by other large veterinary organizations, such as the American Association of Veterinary Medical Boards, an association made up of all 50 state medical boards, and the Veterinary Innovation Council. To help you understand a little bit more about why I'm here, here's my story. Almost 13 years ago, I walked out of the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine, a newly minted veterinarian. I started my career as an emergency clinician. Within a few months of graduation, I founded my little company, Lap of Love Veterinary Hospice, to help families say goodbye to their beloved pets in the comfort of their home. What started as a little part-time job 13 years ago has now grown into an organization that employs over 250 veterinarians nationwide. We now provide a peaceful in-home euthanasia for over 10,000 pets per month in the nation, including almost 1,500 pets in the state of Florida alone. Our company, now with almost 500 employees total, handles close to 10,000 phone calls per week from families inquiring and scheduling the death of their beloved pets. But for the first 3 years, however, I handled every phone call myself. Frequently, families would call that were either outside my normal service area or were in need of care sooner than I could get to them. For example, one particular man I recall phoned me from Okeechobee, a rural area about 3 to 4 hours drive from me and far away from a veterinary clinic, with a large dog he was unable to move. A dog that he had had since it was a puppy and has been fine for a long time without going to a clinic. I could hear his dog crying in the background, which, if you ask my team, is a very common thing that we hear. He begged me to drive to him, but we both knew I wouldn't be able to make it in time to relieve his dog's suffering. Had I been able to prescribe non-controlled pain medicine over the phone, he would have been able to calm his dog enough to hopefully aid in transportation to an emergency room. Instead, as he recounted to me later, he had difficulty in forcing his dog into the car, and an otherwise peaceful canine became aggressive from his pain, biting his owner's hand. After his dog was finally euthanized at an emergency room hours away, he went to the human ER on his own to have his own hand stitched up. Telemedicine would have made the situation much easier. I would have been able to make a quick assessment over the phone or video, called in some medication at a local pharmacy, and his dog would have been calm and sedate in an hour or so, allowing easier and calmer transportation to an ER, or perhaps a few days in hospice for his pet, for his family to gather together. This is one of my many examples I have on how telemedicine would positively affect not only my profession, but the pets and the people that love them dearly as well. Access to care is what my statement is all about, dear committee. The ability to do good for pets, to help the best way we can within the scope and education in our profession. To illustrate how many pet owners stop accessing veterinary care, particularly at the end of their pet's life, my company commissioned an internal study for our own use with a veterinary software company to look at how many pets had not been to a veterinary clinic before euthanasia, regardless of where the euthanasia was performed. The data population was 500,000 euthanasias. Prior to euthanasia, 55% of these cats and 40% of these dogs had not seen a veterinarian for 18 months before the euthanasia. This is a significant number. From the thousands of families that I've personally helped, I can tell you that the reason for this is because taking their elderly pet to the veterinarian is tedious, difficult, and most importantly, traumatizing for both them and their pet, whom they simply want to keep comfortable at the final years of their life. This data illustrates the fact that there is so much more that can be done. We can do better than this, and telemedicine is simply a tool to help bring better care to the animals I've dedicated my life to. Historically, physicians have resisted human telemedicine and human medicine for similar reasons to those offered by some in my industry. According to a history of telemedicine, in the early days of telemedicine technology, the broader culture in medicine viewed this modality of care with a great deal of skepticism. It was seen as a challenge or a threat to the prevailing paradigm of the traditional doctor-patient relationship, the laying on of the hands. But in a post-COVID world, we now know that telemedicine is critical to healthcare access, and its prevalence is only going to grow for people and their pets. Telemedicine is time-tested, safe, and an effective way to treat both people and humans within a standard of care under a board of licensure, as this bill requires.
I've personally used telemedicine 3 times in the past 3 months, and 2 of my 4 children are here alive to show you that it's of major benefit. In the pandemic, federal and state governments across the country waived laws and regulations limiting telemedicine, and the profession is not seeing complaints of harm to animals from telemedicine. Veterinarians are already heavily regulated by the state practice and highly trained, and the state should not unnecessarily block us from offering telemedicine services that can do so much good for so many Florida families and their pets. The American Association of State Veterinary Medical Boards, Veterinary Innovation Council, and the Veterinary Virtual Care Association support allowing new patient visits over veterinary telemedicine. And in a post-COVID world, the legal landscape is rapidly changing to increase professional and consumer access to veterinary telemedicine. The following states already permit a veterinarian to begin working with a new client and patient over telemedicine: Idaho, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Oklahoma, Virginia, and another 7 states more ambiguously require a veterinarian to have recently seen or be personally acquainted with the animal. As consumer demand increases, more public policies are moving towards greater access to veterinary virtual care, and I hope Florida will be a leader in removing unnecessary regulations that are blocking statute. Telemedicine services are good for business. They can grow private business revenues, increase competition in the marketplace, drive down costs to consumers. Veterinary telemedicine appointments can be more efficient, convenient, and economic for both vets and pet owners. Telemedicine meets the needs of a growing millennial population, more comfortable with technology, and can serve to attract a younger clientele base. In a presentation given at the American Veterinary Medical Association's 2021 convention, veterinarian Dr. Greg Bishop demonstrated that, according to current research, clients are happy with telemedicine and willing to pay for it. What we lose out on in terms of certain clinical aspects, we make up for by not stressing out our animals by coming into the veterinary clinic. It's actually an advantage that a telemedicine visit would be cheaper because it's accessible to a lot of people, and there's a lot of people that need that. Often, veterinarians can't observe a pet's movement and behavior better than when seeing the pet comfortable in a home, thus obtaining knowledge that may be unavailable to a pet that is stressed in the clinic, as I have seen thousands of times in my own practice. I respectfully request your yes on the Pets Act today, and thank you for considering my statement, and I will open any questions if you have them.
I have a question. Rep. Placencia for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Doctor, for being here. Isn't it true that under the current rules of the Board of Veterinary Medicine that you can practice telemedicine right now?
For response.
My understanding is that it's an ambiguous allowance. It's not necessarily something that's specifically allowed.
Follow up? Any further questions for Dr. Downey? Rep. Clements?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know the answer to this, Doctor. That's why I'm asking you. I assume that all veterinary medicine practitioners have malpractice insurance. Whether this question has ever been asked to you or not, I don't know, but is there a differential or a price increase or decrease based upon the risk of malpractice for practicing telemedicine on animals? Have you talked to your insurance agent?
You're recognized.
I'm not quite sure. I don't think that there's enough of a basis to have that conversation with the insurance companies just yet.
One more follow-up. Mr. Chairman. Thank you. You had mentioned several times in that wonderfully presented testimony, Go Gators. I represent the University of Florida. I appreciate you being here. But there is a
conflict. Better watch out while Val is on the committee.
I know. It's in Tallahassee. I apologize for doing that.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Rep.
I lost my train of thought. No. My question is, you mentioned the cost of veterinary medicine and practicing and to the patient or the owner of the patient. Do you have plans in your vast network of veterinary to lower the cost of visits because you're able to do it on the telephone?
For response.
So when COVID hit, we stopped doing in-home hospice appointments because in-home hospice appointments take a significant amount of time directly in front of the person. Those are about 45 minutes to 90 minutes of directly being in contact with somebody. So we stopped doing that, and we rolled out immediately as soon as COVID started a tele-advice. And we use that word because that's what AVMA uses as this general broad statement. So right now, for example, an in-home hospice consultation would run around $350 because we have a significant amount of time that we spend with families. Our tele-advice service costs around $95. So yes, it is less expensive for us to do that. Now, our tele-advice service does not provide any prescription medications at all. So all we can do as veterinarians is have a conversation with the family about quality of life, what they should consider. Somebody that's looking at the end of life of a Great Dane with arthritis is completely different than a Yorkshire Terrier with congestive heart failure. It's a completely different conversation.
Any other questions? Okay, showing none. Members, thank you. Members, we are in debate. Rep. Placencia in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Buchanan. I'm gonna vote up on this bill today, very reluctantly. I just wanna say you've been great to work with. You've been very transparent along this entire process. I know we worked on this last year as well. I do have some legitimate concerns about this bill. And hopefully the changes will be made. If not, I will have to be down on this bill on the House floor. But I do want to talk about some of my concerns with this bill. Right now, in the state of Florida, you can practice telemedicine for veterinary care. A veterinarian can do that, but they have to have, they can only do it with their patient, so with their animal that they see. And I've had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with veterinarians over this last year. And you're talking about a very caring and very involved and thoughtful group of people in their practice and really in the care of our loved ones, our family members that have four legs and can't talk. And I know Representative Geller made a joke about it, but the reality is that's what's at hand here. There is a significant difference between human telehealth and animal telehealth. An animal cannot tell you when something hurts specifically. An animal can't tell you where it hurts or how long they've been having it. And I understand that also there are things that the human eye over a cell phone or a whatever great high definition mode of video that you have just doesn't have the ability to see that the hands can touch and feel and understand what's wrong with that animal. And I think that's what's at hand here. I think what's being asked in the compromise is something simple, is only to have one visit with a veterinarian, not just 1 year, but one visit, period. So if 2 years or 3 years down the line, you want to order any kind of medication for your dog, you have had that one visit with that veterinarian. And I don't think that's a lot to ask for. What we're talking about here is the protection of animals. In full disclosure, I have a 106-pound Doberman. Mine is not the one that Representative Buchanan was talking about in the last committee stop, but I do own a 106-pound Doberman. And I've rescued my Doberman from a Dobie rescue in Citrus County. I drove halfway across the state of Florida from where I live to rescue an adult Doberman because I feel strongly about rescuing dogs who other people have abandoned for whatever reason. And that's what we're talking about here. There are the vast majority of animal owners are animal lovers, and they're going to protect their animals. They're going to do right by their animals. But there are groups of people in this state and around this country who don't see and view animals the way most of us do. And that's who we have to protect those animals from. And a veterinarian is the key in protecting them because they're the difference between our animals getting the right care and keeping them from the pain and suffering that they could potentially get and getting the wrong care and being going through the different rescues and the SPCAs and potentially having to suffer through some serious illness because they didn't go see a veterinarian, they just tried to do telehealth. So for those reasons, if there aren't changes made to the bill, I will be down on it on the floor.
Rep. DeSigley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative, thanks for bringing this good bill forward. My local vet had emailed me late last week with some concerns, and it looks like through this amendment, you've attempted to address those. I appreciate that. I know that you and I had a good conversation today, and you know, committed to making this a good product as it moves through the process. I want to let you know I do appreciate that, and I'm going to be up on this on your bill today. So thank you.
Gelosaurus.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank you for bringing this very good bill, Rep. Buchanan. I think this is something that's very sorely needed to help protect our animals and their owners, and I'm very strongly in support of it. I have a few concerns that I'll mention, but that's not going to affect my support for the bill. I just hope it can be a better product. First, I was interested to hear the local veterinarian who spoke about, for instance, out-of-state large corporations that might be trying to take advantage of this situation that we're all facing with COVID. I do have some concern about that. I don't particularly need an answer from you at this point. I just want you to look at that because we want to be sure that this is a positive, not only for the animals and their owners, but also for the veterinarians of our state who are very dedicated, and we need to try and help protect them. There were some other points that I thought that that doctor raised that I thought were worthwhile, and if there is some further tweaking that could be done that would, maybe not everything that they've asked, but if there are some things that can be done that would make this more palatable to some of the veterinary physicians in the state, that would be great. I'm also, as I indicated, very concerned about this amendment. I think that telehealth is not just, let's put it this way, the criticism that was offered seems to indicate that there's a thought that telehealth would be an alternative. It's not. It's just a different tool. And certainly there's going to be a lot of circumstances where an in-person examination is required. But telehealth, it seems to me, particularly lends itself to a first consultation where a good veterinarian is going to say, I don't know this problem, and I need to see your animal, or someone needs to examine this animal in person and let the pet owner know that. But this blanket prohibition on any kind of pain medication, it means a lot of animals are going to suffer after that first consultation. And as I said, if that first telehealth is on a Friday night and the animal can't be seen by the regular vet until Monday, why should that animal suffer? I appreciate that there need to be some guardrails. I just think you can find maybe another guardrail that limits it strictly as to how much can be given, and that it's only, you know, something that can be prescribed if there is some need that can be documented that's urgent. So I wish you'd look at that one, because I'm very concerned as somebody who's owned a lot of pets about animals suffering. So notwithstanding my joke at the beginning, and by the way, the same is true, you know, if that was the case, we couldn't have infants or young babies be examined by telehealth, and we certainly need that tool. They can't really have a conversation either. This is a very good bill. I'm glad you're doing it. Thank you for helping so many people in this state who need it, and I'm going to be up on it. If you can do a little more work on it on a couple of those points, that'd be great. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Rep. Rommel.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Buchanan, thanks for working. I know last week, regulatory reform, there were some concerns with some of the veterinarians, and it seemed like in the amendment you addressed all their concerns that they brought forward to me, so I appreciate you doing that. And Representative Geller, I know you had some concerns whether pets can actually communicate with us, but I can't say I can communicate with all pets, but I did talk to my dog Ginger this weekend, and she saw the agenda, and she was very excited to maybe have the same options as us humans, to not have to go to the vet. And she's a free market thinker, and she also believes, especially she's an older dog, and she lives on a fixed budget herself, that it may actually bring down the cost of pet care too. So I want to give up, you know, make sure you feel good with her, because I had a good conversation with her.
I was just about to say, thank God that dog was named Ginger and not Fluffy. That would be. Rep. Tomka.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Buchanan, for letting me run the amendment for you. I just want to point out, because I have heard multiple concerns from members of the committee and also the presenter, some of the individuals that were speaking, and just want to clarify that the amendment, as Representative Rommel said, addressed most of the concerns that we heard in the last committee stop, and just want to, you know, put these back on your radar about how they have to establish a relationship with their veterans that in person before prescribing controlled substances. And this amendment that is now on this bill addresses those concerns regarding medicines that are considered controlled substances. And for Schedule 2, they're not allowed to prescribe via telemedicine. Thank you for this bill, Representative Buchanan. I know you're working with all the stakeholders. As someone who is a cattle rancher, who probably has the most animals up here on this committee, I will say that this bill is an option. We will not be using telemedicine out at the ranch just because, you know, my dad and technology don't really work well together. But I do think that it is great to have an option. So thank you for bringing this forward, and I look forward to seeing you work with the stakeholders as it moves on.
Any further debates? Showing none, Rep. Buchanan, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to just kind of address a few of the points that were raised. And I may start with Representative Placencia.
You start brought, with Fluffy. Start with Fluffy.
I'm going to move on to Fluffy. How about okay. that? You had brought up the fact that veterinarians are able to practice telehealth. The one thing the FEMA and I, at least in our conversations, agreed on, it does make sense to have some framework and statute around this. And so this is something that we've been working on for months and months. There's been various iterations of this. I believe we've made a number of concessions on our end. I'm going to continue to talk to and work with stakeholders, and I appreciate your input. Representative Geller, I just want to mention that, and you are aware, it was in the bill, that you need to be a Florida licensed veterinarian in order to practice telehealth in the state of Florida. Since my deceased dog was actually brought up, I'd like to actually clarify what was said in a previous committee stop. The only anxiety the dog ever had was going to the veterinarian, okay? The dog was never prescribed any medications for that. Around the being able to diagnose via telehealth, ultimately that's up to the veterinarian. If the veterinarian is unable to diagnose via telehealth, it's incumbent upon them to tell the owner to bring the pet in so that they can be seen or go to the premises where the pet is kept. One thing that I think is left out in a lot of this, the big focus here has been today the veterinarians, but let's also think about, you know, the millions, over 9 million Floridians that have pets, that want better access, that want to drive down the cost, that want to reduce the regulation around it, that want to improve their animals' welfare. And we also want to remember that early and preventative care is often lends to some of the best outcomes. Another thing I want to just address is this bill does not prohibit patients in any way from going to in-person visits. In fact, in all reality, every year or every 3 years, your dog, your animal, will likely need to go in to get vaccinated anyways. Another line item that was brought up was around the issue around VCPR. Again, this bill does not prohibit VCPR, and it doesn't even specifically address VCPR. And so oftentimes for me, what's helpful when I'm looking at, you know, where I'm going to be at on a bill or a piece of legislation is boil it down to, you know, its simplest form. What are we doing here? We're reducing regulation, we're driving down costs, we're increasing access, and we're improving, in this case, the animal's welfare. And so before I close, I also want to thank staff and Chair Rommel's committee and Chair Ngolia's committee who spent a lot of time with us on this, and we appreciate all your hard work. With that, I close.
Having closed on the bill, the question now occurs on CS for House Bill 723. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Whip McFarland is excused. Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby is excused. Clemens?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
No.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure? Nixon? Umfroy?
Yes.
Flaken? Placencia?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Thompson? Tomko?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
Cherengolia?
Yes.
The bill passes, sir.
Members, by your vote, show that CS for House Bill 723 reported favorably with committee substitute. Good job, sir. Okay, members, that concludes our agenda for today. Seeing no further business, Rep. Clemens moves to adjourn without objection. The motion passes, and we are adjourned.